Chapter 16. It was not until the night of our first day on the south bank of the river that we discovered the Fire People. What must have been a band of wandering hunters went into camp not far from the tree in which Lop-Ear and I had elected to roost for the night. The voices of the Fire People at first alarmed us, but later, when darkness had come, we were attracted by the fire. We crept cautiously and silently from tree to tree till we got a good view of the scene. In an open space among the trees, near to the river, the fire was burning. About it were half a dozen firemen. Lop-Ear clutched me suddenly, and I could feel him tremble. I looked more closely, and saw the wizened little old hunter who had shot Broken Tooth out of the tree years before. When he got up and walked about, throwing fresh wood upon the fire, I saw that he limped with his crippled leg. Whatever it was a permanent injury. He seemed more dried up and wizened than ever, and the hair on his face was quite gray. The other hunters were young men. I noted, lying near them on the ground, their bows and arrows, and I knew the weapons for what they were. The firemen wore animal skins around their waists, and across their shoulders. Their arms and legs, however, were bare, and they wore no footgear. As I have said before, they were not quite so hairy as we of the folk. They did not have large heads, and between them and the folk there was very little difference in the degree of the slant of the head back from the eyes. They were less stooped than we, less springy in their movements. Their backbones and hips and knee joints seemed more rigid. Their arms were not so long as ours either, and I did not notice that they ever balanced themselves when they walked, by touching the ground on either side with their hands. Also, their muscles were more rounded and symmetrical than ours, and their faces were more pleasing. Their nose orifices opened downward. Likewise, the bridges of their noses were more developed, did not look so squat nor crushed as ours. Their lips were less flabby and pendant, and their eye teeth did not look so much like fangs. However, they were quite as thin-hipped as we, and did not weigh much more. Take it all in all, they were less different from us than were we from the tree people. Certainly, all three kinds were related, and not so remotely related at that. The fire around which they sat was especially attractive. Lop-Ear and I sat for hours, watching the flames and smoke. It was most fascinating when fresh fuel was thrown on, and showers of sparks went flying upward. I wanted to come closer and look at the fire, but there was no way. We were crouching in the forks of a tree on the edge of the open space, and we did not dare run the risk of being discovered. The firemen squatted around the fire, and slept with their heads bowed forward on their knees. They did not sleep soundly. Their ears twitched in their sleep, and they were restless. Every little while one or another got up, and threw more wood upon the fire. About the circle of light in the forest, in the darkness beyond, roamed hunting animals. Lop-Ear and I could tell them by their sounds. There were wild dogs and a hyena, and for a time there was a great yelping and snarling that awakened on the instant the whole circle of sleeping firemen. Once a lion and a lioness stood beneath our tree and gazed out with bristling hair and blinking eyes. The lion licked his chops and was nervous with eagerness, as if he wanted to go forward and make a meal. But the lioness was more cautious. It was she that discovered us, and the pair stood and looked up at us, silently, with twitching, scenting nostrils. Then they growled, looked once again at the fire, and turned away into the forest. For a much longer time Lop-Ear and I remained and watched. Now and again we could hear the crashing of heavy bodies, in the thickets and underbrush, and from the darkness of the other side, across the circle, we could see eyes gleaming in the firelight. In the distance we heard a lion roar, and from far off came the scream of some stricken animal, splashing and floundering in a drinking place. Also, from the river, came a great grunting of rhinoceroses. In the morning, after having had our sleep, we crept back to the fire. It was still smoldering, and the firemen were gone. We made a circle through the forest to make sure, and then we ran to the fire. I wanted to see what it was like, and between thumb and finger I picked up a glowing coal. My cry of pain and fear, as I dropped it, stampeded Lop-Ear into the trees, and his flight frightened me after him. The next time we came back more cautiously, and we avoided the glowing coals. We fell to imitating the firemen. We squatted down by the fire, and with heads bent forward on our knees, made believe to sleep. Then we mimicked their speech, talking to each other in their fashion and making a great gibberish. I remembered seeing the wizened old hunter poke the fire with a stick. I poked the fire with a stick, turning up masses of live coals and clouds of white ashes. This was great sport, and soon we were coated white with the ashes. It was inevitable that we should imitate the firemen in replenishing the fire. We tried it first with small pieces of wood. It was a success. The wood flamed up and crackled, and we danced and gibbered with delight. Then we began to throw on larger pieces of wood. We put on more and more, until we had a mighty fire. We dashed excitedly back and forth, dragging dead limbs and branches from out the forest. The flames soared higher and higher, and the smoke column out-towered the trees. There was a tremendous snapping and crackling and roaring. It was the most monumental work we had ever effected with our hands, and we were proud of it. We, too, were firemen, we thought, as we danced there, white gnomes in the conflagration. The dried grass and underbrush caught fire, but we did not notice it. Suddenly a great tree on the edge of the open space burst into flames. We looked at it with startled eyes. The heat of it drove us back. Another tree caught, and another, and then half a dozen. We were frightened. The monster had broken loose. We crouched down in fear, while the fire ate around the circle, and hemmed us in. Into Lop-Ear's eyes came the plaintive look that always accompanied incomprehension, and I know that in my eyes must have been the same look. We huddled, with our arms around each other, until the heat began to reach us, and the odor of burning air was in our nostrils. Then we made a dash of it, and fled away westward through the forest, looking back and laughing as we ran. By the middle of the day we came to a neck of land, made, as we afterward discovered, by a great curve of the river that almost completed a circle. Right across the neck lay bunched several low and partly wooded hills. Over these we climbed, looking backward at the forest which had become a sea of flame that swept eastward before a rising wind. We continued to the west, following the river bank, and before we knew it, we were in the midst of the abiding place of the fire people. This abiding place was a splendid strategic selection. It was a peninsula, protected on three sides by the curving river. On only one side was it accessible by land. This was the narrow neck of the peninsula, and here the several low hills were a natural obstacle. Practically isolated from the rest of the world, the fire people must have here lived and prospered for a long time. In fact, I think it was their prosperity that was responsible for the subsequent migration that worked such calamity upon the folk. The fire people must have increased in numbers until they pressed uncomfortably against the bounds of their habitat. They were expanding, and in the course of their expanding they drove the folk before them, and settled down themselves in the caves, and occupied the territory that we had occupied. But Lop-Ear and I little dreamed of all this when we found ourselves in the fire people's stronghold. We had but one idea, and that was to get away, though we could not forbear humoring our curiosity by peeping out upon the village. For the first time we saw the women and children of the fire people. The latter ran for the most part naked, though the former wore skins of wild animals. The fire people, like ourselves, lived in caves. The open space in front of the cave sloped down to the river, and in the open space burned many small fires. But whether or not the fire people cooked their food, I do not know. Lop-Ear and I did not see them cook. Yet it is my opinion that they surely must have performed some sort of rude cookery. Like us, they carried water and gourds from the river. There was much coming and going, and loud cries made by the women and children. The latter played about and cut up antics quite in the same way as did the children of the folk, and they more nearly resembled the children of the folk than did the grown fire people resemble the grown folk. Lop-Ear and I did not linger long. We saw some of the part grown boys shooting with bow and arrow, and we sneaked back into the thicker forest, and made our way to the river. And there we found a catamaran, a real catamaran, one evidently made by some fireman. The two logs were small and straight, and were lashed together by means of tough roots and cross pieces of wood. This time the idea occurred simultaneously to us. We were trying to escape out of the fire people's territory. What better way than by crossing the river on these logs? We climbed on board and shoved off. A sudden something gripped the catamaran and flung it downstream violently against the bank. The abrupt stoppage almost whipped us off into the water. The catamaran was tied to a tree by a rope of twisted roots. This we untied before shoving off again. By the time we had paddled well out into the current, we had drifted so far downstream that we were in full view of the fire people's abiding place. So occupied were we with our paddling, our eyes fixed upon the other bank, that we knew nothing until aroused by a yell from the shore. We looked around. There were the fire people, many of them, looking at us, and pointing at us, and more were crawling out of the caves. We sat up to watch, and forgot all about paddling. There was a great hullabaloo on the shore. Some of the firemen discharged their bows at us, and a few of the arrows fell near us, but the range was too great. It was a great day for Lop-Ear and me. To the east the conflagration we had started was filling half the sky with smoke. And here we were, perfectly safe in the middle of the river, encircling the fire people's stronghold. We sat and laughed at them as we dashed by, swinging south, and southeast to east, and even to northeast, and then east again, southeast and south, and on around to the west, a great double curve, where the river nearly tied a knot in itself. As we swept on to the west, the fire people far behind, a familiar scene flashed upon our eyes. It was the great drinking place, where we had wandered once or twice, to watch the circus of the animals when they came down to drink. Beyond it, we knew, was the carrot patch, and beyond that the caves and the abiding place of the horde. We began to paddle for the bank that slid swiftly past, and before we knew it, we were down upon the drinking places used by the horde. There were the women and children, the water carriers, a number of them, filling their gourds. At sight of us, they stampeded madly up the runways, leaving behind them a trail of gourds they had dropped. We landed, and of course we neglected to tie up the catamaran, which floated off down the river. Right cautiously we crept up a runway. The folk had all disappeared into their holes, though here and there we could see a face peering out at us. There was no sign of Red Eye. We were home again. And that night we slept in our own little cave high up on the cliff, though first we had to evict a couple of pugnacious youngsters who had taken possession. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.